Welcome to the Samuel Leeds podcast. My name is Amelia. I'm part of the marketing team. And today we're going to be interviewing him about his journey, his story, and finding out the truth about Samuel Leeds.
It's awesome to be on the Samuel Leeds show.
Yeah, thought it would be a good thing to hear your story first. So I think we should go all the way back. And I wanted to ask you, what was your first entrepreneurial activity?
My first entrepreneurial activity was probably delivering paper rounds when I was like 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you have a first business?
Well, I guess it depends how you define business. So when I was at school, I was delivering paper rounds, I was washing cars, I was cutting people's lawns. I was basically just doing anything and everything to make a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And then I had a bank account. And I would just save it like crazy. Mm-hmm. The bank manager thought that I was a drug dealer because every day walking home from school, I'd just put more money in. My dad had a market store. He used to sell magic tricks, a little market stand, and I used to buy magic tricks off my dad and then sell them to my schoolmates for a little bit more, and then keep a little bit. So I had loads of different, I guess they're not really businesses, but ways of making money. My first business. Mm-hmm. Was a plastering business, and I told you about this the other week. But yeah. On my work experience, I went on a building site to plaster, mm-hmm. and on my summer holiday, I went to a plastering crash course and learned how to, you know, basically plaster a house. But because I was at school, I was taking on jobs that I didn't have the time to do, and I would find redundant plasterers who had no business sense whatsoever, mm-hmm. and I would give them the work and then take a cut. So I guess that's probably my first business. Because I guess the definition of a business is making money when you're not doing the work. Mm-hmm. So that was my first business when I was like 15, 16. And so definitely, even as a kid, definitely entrepreneur, played a lot of Monopoly. most successful business people that I know, like I'm interviewing James Carn next week.
Yeah.
Similar thing. He had paper rounds and he played Monopoly. It's those two things.
Interesting.
If you're a kid and you play Monopoly and have paper rounds, you're just going to be a millionaire.
Okay, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
So have you always been interested in property?
Not really, no. Since a very young age, I got interested in property because, well, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, mm-hmm. and that was obviously amazing, and that talks about investments. My stepdad had some investments. Mm-hmm. My mom and my stepdad got married when I was like 12. So my dad was influential on me as an entrepreneur, but then my stepdad was influential on me on the property side. And I think I just realized when I was a teenager and when I wanted to become financially free that property was the best vehicle to achieve that. And all the people on the Sunday Times Rich List, they're all in property pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I just really liked the idea of owning houses. And even since playing Monopoly as a kid, I wanted to do that in real life. So 17 years old was when I really went hard on the property stuff.
Because both you and obviously your brother, Russell Leeds, are super successful. He's obviously the CEO of this company. And I was wondering, what do you think it was about your environment or maybe like your upbringing that have made you both really successful?
I think, I don't know exactly what it is because me and Russell are the first people in the family as far back as I can trace in the family tree that are like really wired for business. Mm. And I mean, my mom and dad both were self-employed. So my dad was a gardener and then became a magician. That's why I said he had a market stall and stuff. And he was reasonably successful at that. He's now got a different business. My mom, mobile hairdresser. So they're self-employed. But I don't know what it was. I mean, my dad's quite hard on us, so he didn't give us any money. In fact, neither of us were given any handouts. And I think that kids that are given handouts, I see so often people that are really successful and they desperately want their kids to be successful and they give them business loans and they send them to the best schools and the best. We didn't have that. And I think sometimes having it hard in life, and I wouldn't say I had it really hard, but we didn't grow up with money.
Yeah.
And there's times in my life where we had very, very little as a family. And I think sometimes that makes you want it even more because you think, actually, I don't want to live like this forever. So, but I have no idea what it is. I have no idea why we're wired that way.
Interesting. Can you not remember any like light bulb moment or pivotal moment when you thought, okay, entrepreneurship is for me or property is for me?
I didn't like the idea of working a job forever that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I always wanted, and I have something just in my belly where I want to leave a legacy. I want to help people. I want to make an impact. even from when I was at school, my favourite subject was always speaker class, because I loved getting on the stage and just sharing and speaking and entertaining and inspiring. For me, part of the reason what drives me to succeed is because I want to then be able to share that and inspire other people. Mm-hmm. So I almost do it for the stories, you know. For me anyway, I don't know about Russell, but me and Russell were always really competitive. So Russell had his own business and I had my own business. And we were really competitive, and that's why we just decided a couple of years ago just to join forces. And that's when he joined the business, became CEO, and that's how it happened.
So how do you find working with a sibling?
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think is the best thing about it? Is it because you know each other so well that you can kind of...
I know Russell inside out. He knows me. I know his flaws. He knows mine. And we're both pulling in the exact same direction. So even if we disagree on stuff, we both want the same end goal, which is to have a thriving business, to help people. I love working with Russell. It's the best decision I ever made in the business.
So you talk about legacy.
Yeah.
So what is it that you want to, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for helping people and for inspiring people.
Yeah.
Because no one's ever going to remember me for having lots of houses or making lots of money. But they will remember me if I can impact people and change people's lives. Yeah. So I just think having a rippling effect. So helping people live a better life, inspiring people to think bigger is what I want to be remembered for.
Mm. So you do that through teaching people to do with property and property investing. And what is it that kind of, because you were really successful in property first. So what made you then want to teach? Was it that desire to help people?
Kind of. I remember when I was actually out in Zambia when I was like 18 years old. And I remember being in a village where the kids, there was a lot of orphan kids, the parents had died, and there was this one boy who was walking 12 kilometers a day to collect water. And I remember thinking, I don't even believe that. I just can't believe that someone would have so little. It just didn't, to me, it was just unthinkable. And as a teenager, I remember vowing to God, if ever I make it, if ever I become successful, I'm going to go back to that village and I'm going to install water somehow, clean water into that village for the families and for the kids. And I think part before I even became successful, before I had lots of houses, I almost told myself and I made a promise that I would be generous, not only with my money, but also everything. So most rich people hide. When you become rich, you don't want to share with other people how you did that. And people keep it really close to their chest and speaking riddles. And I just thought, if ever I become successful, I'm not going to be that rich guy who disappears, holds everything close to his chest. You know, I'm going to be generous with my money. I'm going to be generous with my time. I'm going to be generous with my knowledge. And I think as a result of that, I just had no excuse. And that's why now a lot of the work that I do, both on the charitable stuff across Africa and the teaching, and it's just because that's me. That's me in my core.
So you've talked about that when you saw that, you were kind of like, oh, if I ever become successful, I really want to help. So is success something, did you see the success of this business before it happened? Like, did you think you were going to be this successful?
I don't think I thought I was going to be this successful when I was 17, 18. Okay. But
why?
Just because it's, right now I'm a lot more successful than I could have ever envisioned.
Okay.
You know, just financially, the size of the business, the amount of people that we impact and help. So no, I don't think it's as much. Did I see it? Yes. But I think what happens is every time I take things to a new level, I then envision the next level and just keep pushing it and keep pushing it and keep pushing it. Most people, what happens is, I think when most people get a bit of success, they then relax off. So they're like, oh man, I'm financially free now. That means I can quit my job and I don't have to work. And then they just, they cool off a little bit.
Yeah.
Or their business gets to a certain size where they think, oh, I'm comfortable now. Or this is a good size. But for me, I've never done that. And I'm still only young. I'm 28, but I've been in business now just over a decade. And every time I take things to a new level, every time I'm like, wow, I don't stop and pat myself on the back and say, isn't it great? Oh, this is good. I'm comfortable. I just continue pushing it. And I think I don't know how long I'll be like that for, but that's what, and when you have momentum on your side and you continue to put the activity and the energy in, it just snowballs. So now I don't know what's going to happen next. I've got my next couple of years planned.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2021, I want to turn over 100 million in the space of a year. I want to be turning over 100 million a year, which is very, very realistic from from where I am now, mm-hmm. it's not. I'm not. At the moment, we're on about 12 million a year turnover. So 100 million is the goal. But then when we hit 100 million, then maybe that, for me, that's almost like the unthinkable. 100 million, I can mm-hmm. visualize it. It's possible, but it's like, okay, that's a long step off. But when we hit that, no doubt, then it will be 200 million, a billion. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
And that's just finances. But there's a whole host of other stuff.
That's incredible. What do you think differentiates you? Like, why do you think you've been so successful as a trainer?
As a trainer?
Mm-hmm.
Because, number one, I am actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not talking about stuff that I did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I'm actually doing it today. The way that I teach is very fresh because I did this yesterday. I mean, I think yeah. that's one thing. I think secondly, I think it's my desire to see people succeed. A lot of people overcomplicate things to make themselves look intelligent.
Yeah, and so true.
I'm not about that life. For me, I'm not trying to make... In fact, I get accused of the opposite. People say to me, Samuel, you make it sound too simple. And I think I take that as a compliment, because if I can make something sound really simple so that a 10-year-old can understand it, then actually as a trainer, then that's a good thing. And then the thing also is just my absolute passion and my determination, again, to see people succeed, but my passion in it. I love property investing. I love making money. So I think that comes across. And also my courage as well. I'm very unafraid to look silly. So I'll literally pull out my laptop and find live deals in front of people at all of my training programs. Mm. You'll never come to any of my training events where I don't get a laptop out and find a deal, pick up the phone, call the agents. And I think that takes a lot of courage, because you're very vulnerable, because you could very easily fail. And sometimes I do fail. But again, I'm not really interested in trying to look smart or look good.
You're not scared to fail.
No, I'm not scared to fail. I just want people to see how it works in the real world. And I know that failing is actually part of success. And that's part of the message as well. The reason people aren't successful is because they're so scared to fail.
Yeah.
So they think, oh, I need to just know everything up front. Everything up front before I take an action. Actually, the only way you can learn is by taking one step at a time and figuring it out as you go along a little bit. So you're going to fail, but you're going to fail your way to success. And a mistake is not a bad thing. A mistake is a lesson. So I think that's part of the message. So if I fail on stage and I mess up a deal, fantastic. It's even better. If I succeed, fantastic. Whatever happens, you're just going to draw the lessons from it.
Yeah. And in terms of failure, so what do you think is, what's been the hardest thing for you to master? Becoming a successful entrepreneur, what's the one like quality you've really had to train yourself because you're not maybe naturally as good at?
I don't know what the hardest thing is. There's a lot of hard things. I guess sometimes when it comes to the organization of stuff, I found that difficult. So when I first started with my properties, you know, when I was getting lots of tenants, I'd lose the AST contracts. I'd forget who'd moved in and what they'd paid. I wouldn't have the correct insurances, like the detail stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the devil is in the detail. My philosophy is always to look at the big picture and to focus on the big picture, which generally speaking serves me well. But then I have been caught out by stuff. So I think that's been one problem. And then another problem has been just growing too big too quick. You know, and again, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's always growing pains. And in every, that's my property business, that's my training business, that's my own personal life. Like when you go from, you know, 17 years old, driving around a Ford KA, which's worth £500, struggling to afford petrol, and then within a few years you're dealing with a lot of money.
It's
a massive, making money is one thing, and then saving it and managing it is a whole other lesson. So I think that's something, just being really careful and organized. And also another thing I have to learn, and I'm still learning today, is because I don't really care what people think, sometimes I think I can come across as almost a bit rude, and in certain instances, just knowing how to talk to people, and I'm from quite a working class background.
Mm-hmm.
So being in situations where you're dealing with people that are, you know, maybe politicians, or like when we bought the castle and the free French flew in and there's these, you know, really high profile people that have lots of etiquette, and I don't really know about that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've had to learn that. There's definitely been a lot of learnings. And I'm impulsive and I'm impatient, and learning to wait for things, and That's another issue. I mean, geez, there's so many. But usually wherever there's a weakness, there's also a strength somewhere. Yeah. And it's just about managing it and being aware of it.
Mm. And it's because you've not been patient and kind of sat back is the reason for the success.
Yeah.
One of them. So, yeah. And I can definitely agree with what you were saying about the company growing so fast. Because the company's obviously not always look like this. I know you used to do majority of the roles back in the day. So I thought you could maybe tell the story of when you used to do all the kind of training and the crash courses and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment I've got, you're part of it, quite a big training company. We've got marketing department, customer service department, sales department. We've got advisors and coaches, finance team, logistics, operations team that deal with all the venues and stuff. But there's not one person here that works in the company where I haven't done their job at one point. Like, probably badly. even the videography that you do right now, and all that, I've done that at one point. So, I mean, I think the story you're talking about is my first crash course when people, I did literally everything.
Yeah.
Everything. I'm not just talking about the background of booking the venue and marketing it. I'm talking about when people arrived, there would be me on reception. Hey, you know, I would sign them in. Then I would go and usher them to their seats. And if there wasn't enough chairs, I'd have to stack chairs. Then I'd go on stage. Hey, welcome. And then I'd just facilitate everything. When people wanted to buy books or whatever, I'd then go back and I'd be taking the payments and figuring out the forms, everything. Then the event would finish and then I'd clean up the room and, you know, just absolutely everything. And then before people even left the room, I'd be there with my phone taking testimonials and putting together like a movie trailer of what happened, following up with everybody afterwards. Like, it was just me. And I think you've got to be prepared to do that. And if an entrepreneur, if you want to run a business, but you're too proud to stack chairs, then you probably shouldn't be running the business. You've got to be prepared to do anything and everything. That doesn't mean you should be the person that always does it, because if you're running the business, you've got other stuff to worry about, and obviously your time's valuable. I'm not talking about not valuing your time, but you've got to be humble enough to do everything within the business.
Is there anything that you would change about your journey?
Probably not. I mean, even bad things that have happened, everything happens for a reason. Even last year when I broke my leg, and it was terrible. As a result of that, I've made connections in the hospital. When I was in the I broke my leg, it was a terrible experience. I lost 25% of my blood. I was in hospital in Uganda for 10 days with no food, because they don't feed you in developing country hospitals.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. And I remember just lying there thinking, why is this happening? I couldn't fly home because I wasn't fit to fly. Terrible experience. As a result of that, the mission and the works that we were supposed to be doing in Uganda got delayed. And I was just thinking, this is just a terrible situation. God, why would you let this happen? You know, what are you thinking? But I was just in Uganda last week, and I'm now walking again, despite the doctors in the UK telling me I wouldn't. But the thing is, when I was in the hospital, there's a lot of people that were coming and they didn't have any money. And they were literally being sent away, and they were dying, or they'd been hit by a car. And they're absolutely mangled, but they couldn't afford the operations. They couldn't afford, and they just get sent away. And I was thinking, man, that's just. And I was then. It was absolutely. Horrible. That was more painful than my leg. It was destroying me. And I was saying to the doctors, man, you know, send them in. Can I do something?
Yeah.
Anyway, I was in Uganda last week, and I just gave a donation to the hospital and said, look, if anyone comes in, and don't send them away, here's a fund, and I gave some money. And I said, take it out of that. That was only 2 weeks. That was only like a week or two ago when I was in Uganda. I think just last week. I've just had a message from the doctor. And she said, there was someone that came in 3 days ago. They were hit by a car. Mangled. She sent me the pictures and it was horrible.
Oh,
she said, we would have normally sent them away. But from the fund, we've operated on them and they're going to be fine. And I just thought,
that's incredible.
And that text just came through a few hours ago from the doctor. And it made me quite emotional. But I just thought, if I hadn't been there, maybe God didn't want me out in the villages with the kids and in the schools. Maybe he wanted me in the hospital, because there's people that really suffering.
He wanted you
suffering.
To see something.
Yeah, I just think everything happens for a reason. So when you say, would you change anything? Even the bad, there's been bad things. Yes, there's been struggles. Yes, I've messed up. Yes, other people have let me down. Yeah, I've had injuries. Yeah, I've lost money. Yeah, of course. But even in the bad things, I just think everything happens for a reason. And it's about finding the good, flipping the cards. And, you know, so have I any regrets? I'd probably say no. Do I wish anything was different? No. It is what it is. I am where I am. and everything happens for a reason, I believe.
Yeah. I love that positive mindset. Is there, so on a lighter note, is there anything that, like, what is your best moment of your journey so far?
Best moment of my journey?
Like the one that would first come to your head that you remember being the happiest or the proudest of?
Yeah, I think it's just seeing the successes of my students. I think every single week someone comes into the offices or into my home and tells me their story of how they had their life changed, they're financially free through property as a result of our training. And I film that and put that on YouTube. And that gives me the biggest kick. Like my currency is seeing people have their lives changed through the training that we provide. So I think that's just the proudest thing. It's not creating a big bank balance. It's not creating a big property portfolio. It's not creating a big empire. It's creating big people and investing in people. So I think that's the thing that makes me the proudest.
No, that's incredible. And all like the videos have been doing so well on YouTube. We've been doing a lot of financial freedom challenges and things like that. And I just wanted to ask, at the first financial freedom challenge that you did, it went viral, obviously, and I wanted to know, what was your kind of reaction to that? Were you expecting it to go viral? Did you know the content was going to do so well?
I think every time I've done a good video like that, I kind of hope it goes viral.
Yeah.
It usually doesn't go viral. It usually gets, you know, it might do well, but that video did particularly well. Did I expect it to do super well? I think I hoped it did. Yeah, it was exciting. It was amazing. But again, looking at the YouTube video, if you look and you see the 1.5 million or however many views it's had, it's kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
How many views it's had. What's really meaningful is, have people, as a result of that, been inspired and actually taken action and had their life changed, which fortunately, there's so many stories off the back of that. Because seeing me start from scratch, all over again. It just takes away the excuses people have, because people say, oh, it doesn't work in my town. Well, look, I just picked a random town out of a hat and drove there with an old yellow car with £450 with no money and became financially free in 1 week. Like, if that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will. And also the teaching through it, people just modeled what I did, just watched it, and then they've gone and done it. And I think it's amazing. I'm really proud of what we did that week. And I'm also really pleased that people have watched it and viewed it, and it made me want to do it again. I've gone and done it in America. I went and did it in Blackpool, where I helped someone else become financially free. And it's definitely not going to be the last time I do more challenges like that.
Look forward to what is to come. So you always say that the best investment that you can make is in your self-education, and the second best is in property. I was going to ask you, what is the third best investment?
Okay, the third best is in your brand.
Interesting. Okay, explain more.
So best is in yourself, i.e. in educating yourself and growing yourself and learning. Second best is in property, because that's gonna just give you a passive income and sit there and grow. Third best is in your brand, is telling the world what you do, because ultimately money comes from people, and your tenants pay you rent. That's people. The property doesn't give you any money, and if people don't know who you are, then they can't do business with you. So I think I'd rather you strip my bank balance than strip my brand. Because if suddenly, tomorrow, nobody knew who I was.
Yeah.
Everybody just, their mind was wiped from who I am. That's going to hinder my business so much.
Yeah.
Because suddenly I can't do joint ventures. Suddenly I can't pick up the phone and have the best solicitors and the best accountants. No one knows who I am. I've got no kudos. I've got no brand. Mm-hmm. I've got no reputation. That's the strongest thing. So, and I invest money into that.
Yeah.
I invest money into my brand by having 6 full-time videographers like you.
Yeah.
You know, and by and also not just money, but also time, sitting down and having the time to put out a video every single day, helping people, teaching people, but I'm also raising my own profile.
Definitely.
So I think brand is from a business point of view and a kind of commercial point of view, the third best investment is in your brand.
Yeah.
Telling the world what you do.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because you can definitely see like the business has gone so incredibly well from like all the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But if you invest in the third thing without the first thing, you've got nothing to tell the world. Because if you're telling the world who you are and you're branding yourself, but you're not investing in yourself, no one wants to know, because it's like, well, what have you got to add? What have you got to say? What have you got to... Whereas if you're investing in yourself and you're also investing in telling your story and getting your brand out there, and of course investing in property, then you're going to win.
Yeah. Definitely. I thought that's such good advice. Is there any, like, what's the best piece of advice you've been given by someone else, and what is the worst?
The best, oh man, it's hard to say what the single best thing is. There's so many. Like right now, something I just read just very recently, but I thought, what a great piece of advice from James Kahn. I'm meeting James Kahn next week for an interview. And he said, observe the masses and do the opposite. And I think that's really good advice, because if you jump on the bandwagon, you're always going to get average results because everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
But if you observe what everyone else is doing, even in property, you know, at the moment everyone's saying, oh, Brexit, I'm going to wait. But when people are scared, that's when you should be greedy. So observe what people are doing, do the opposite. I think that's really smart advice. The worst piece of advice I've had is from people that have just said stuff like, you know, hey, to earn more than you need is greedy. Mm. You know, cool off. People that are actually trying to protect me, they're telling me to just, you know, dog, tone it down.
Stop working so hard.
Yeah, don't work so hard. You know, just relax. You know, that to me, that's terrible advice. So that's definitely the worst. And the thing is, people that say that kind of thing might mean well.
Mm.
You know, oh, you don't want to earn too much money because then you'll fall in love with money. Actually, the people that love money the most actually usually have none.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you're starving for a meal and you're like, oh my gosh, and you're so desperate for, say, pizza. But then when you have a pizza and you're like, mine. But then you have a few pieces and suddenly you cool off and you're like, oh, whatever. Yeah. Hey, do you want some? Because you're not hungry anymore. And in the same way, people that I know that have money and myself, you don't need to be so skinflint. So you can relax a little bit. Hey, have some, share some. It's all good. And, you know, myself, I do a lot of joint ventures with people. And I like to think I'm quite generous in the deals that I do because I'm not like desperate. I don't need the money. Mm. So people that say, you know, don't earn lots of money because you'll begin to love it and you'll be greedy. I just think it's just them talking from their lack of experience. Anyone that says that, I'll ask them, look, you've been poor, clearly. Have you ever been rich? And the answer is probably no, because I've been rich and I've been poor, and I'll tell you which one I prefer every time.
I know you've got two beautiful children, Ruby and Luke, and I was going to ask you, if you could pass on one characteristic, what would you pass on?
Ambition.
Ambition.
Yeah. Got to want it. If you want to be successful, it's never going to happen unless you really want it. So I think having the ambition, you can lack everything else, but if you want it really bad and you're prepared to do whatever it takes, then you're gonna get whatever you want in life. So if I could pass on one thing to my kids, it'll be that fire and ambition to be successful, to do well.
Definitely. And do you want them to get into property?
I'd love them to, but they can do whatever they want.
So I know you've been doing a lot of reading at the minute, and I was going to say, what is one book that you love, one book that you hate, and one book that you want to read?
Okay, so I really enjoy reading people's biographies, successful people's biographies. Richard Branson's book, Screw It, Let's Do It, is one of my favorite books. So simple, so fresh, so fun and inspiring. So that's I'm going to probably say that one as my favorite book right now. Book that I've hated? I can't say I can really remember a book that I've hated.
That's a good thing.
I mean, if I read a book and I didn't like it, I'd probably just put it down and move on. I don't tend to ever dwell on things I don't like, ever. Mm-hmm. If I don't like something, I just move on from it. So what book have I really not liked? I can't even answer that question. And the last question was, which book do I want to read that I haven't read yet?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. I've got quite a few at home on the bookshelf that I haven't read yet. I think more biographies. There's people like that, like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and these guys, they've written books and there's biographies about them, and I've not actually read them yet, and I really should have, so, because they're richest people in the world, so to not read it is really probably a sin. So Warren Buffett, I need to read some more Warren Buffett books.
In your like everyday life, to be the successful person that you are, do you have any like rituals? Or
I guess it depends what you mean by rituals. So I pray regularly.
Yeah.
I do have time of quiet as well sometimes. Mm-hmm. I go out for walks quite regularly, especially before a training event. If I'm going to be running a training event the day before, I like to just have a little bit of quiet. I'll usually have some time to myself. Okay. I read quite a bit.
Is there anything you do every day to kind of keep your mind sharp? Or
I always have time for gratitude. So every day, before I sleep and when I get up,
mm-hmm.
I'll make an effort to think about the things that I'm grateful for that day. I guess that's probably it. And I don't even see it as a ritual. It's not like, I haven't done it, or I need to do it. It's just an habitual thing. You know, when I go to bed and when I get up, I'll just think, you know, what am I thankful for that day? And focus on that and just hone that, even if it's only for like 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that I guess it's part of my everyday life.
Yeah. In terms of that, what would keep you up at night? Like, does anything to do with the business keep you up?
Nothing keeps me up at night. I sleep super well. I sleep super well. Even if we've got really bad stuff going on and there's stressful things, or if we've got an event coming up which I need to prepare for, if I'm just about to be speaking in front of thousands of people, or if we've got, you know, a court case with a tenant, or I always sleep well at night because I know that ultimately, you could strip me from everything, and as long as I still had my family and my friends and my health, it's all good. So I sleep really well. Nothing keeps me up.
Yeah. You like to put little marketing ideas though in your phone and
yes,
I probably message the marketing team.
I probably message you and the guys. Yeah.
And the last thing I was going to ask you is, do you think you are still the same man that you were 5 years ago?
No.
What do you think's changed? If I met the old Samuel now,
yeah.
What's the biggest differences?
Well, I'm smarter. I'm more experienced. Mm-hmm. I've got more courage. I'm a better communicator. I'm slimmer. If you're the same person, of course I am the same person, but well, actually I'm not. I think after a 5-year period, probably your skin is probably no longer your same skin, you know, which means that literally you are a different, you've got the same heart and organs maybe, but I don't think that's quite what you meant. Listen, if you're, even when I watch my videos, if I watch videos from me a year ago, my attitude is, unless I'm embarrassed at how bad they were, I haven't grown enough.
I like that.
So I'll watch a video from a year ago and I'm like, ooh, you know, I didn't explain that very well. The quality on the video wasn't great. Or, you know, I seem a little bit, I don't seem as authentic as I should. What's, you know, Luz, why did you keep saying that? Or why did you keep stuttering over your words? Or whatever it might be. If you're not embarrassed, even this podcast, I really hope that in a year's time, I watch this podcast and say, oh my goodness, Samuel, what were you saying? You were chatting nonsense. You weren't getting your words out properly. You didn't answer it as well as you could have done, I hope. Because if I look back in a year's time and say, wow, that was a good interview, then it shows that I've not grown.
Yeah.
So now I'm totally different from what I was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And some of my school friends say, Samuel, you changed. I'm like, good. Thank you. Because if I haven't changed since I was at school with you, and we were catching the bus together eating chocolate for 20, like, if I haven't changed since then I've got serious problems.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, and in terms of the company and what is to come, is there anything you can give away, or are your lips sealed?
Yes, I can. In terms of the company, we are going to be running crash courses in more locations.
Interesting.
We're going to be making some of our training available online as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to be massively upping the ante on YouTube and putting out more content, helping more people, and definitely not slowing down.
That's so exciting. Thank you so much for letting me interview you today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you all for watching. If you have any questions that you would like Samuel to answer, definitely leave a review and tell us what you think about the podcast as well. And we will see you in the next episode. Bye.